Welcome to another fresh and fine episode of the Femme Fatale podcast, where I love little known facts about the inner workings of Hollywood, and so do you. When it comes to digging up the truth, I am all over it, like Miley Cyrus on a stripper pole made of fruit roll-ups. This week is no exception, of course. The Disney movie Frozen made big news this month for supposedly being the biggest animated movie of all time. Ooh. But I have some evidence that suggests that's not entirely accurate. If you, listener, have a shrieking, obsessed five-year-old child living with you in your home, and you're looking for a way to crush her soul entirely, I have the ammo and it's coming up. Plus, how many Hollywood people does it take to change a hairstyle? Well, when it's a celebrity and it's for a major movie, you just might be surprised. Plus, I take your questions about Saturday Night Live, Justin Bieber's urinary functions, and the Divergent series. With me in the studio is Baby Vegas.
Hello.
Baby Vegas, how many times have you seen Frozen? 10 billion times!
Zero, much to the chagrin of also gay men as well as five-year-old girls.
Really? Gay men love Frozen?
They're obsessed with this movie. I hear about this all the time on Facebook.
Do you want to know a really cool thing to do?
What?
My brother does this now. He's got a five-year-old girl. Uh-huh. And this is what he does. He'll go into, say you're at a fast food joint and you know they've got those little playrooms, you know, that the five-year-olds play in. And the parents, there's big play class, or like at IKEA, you could see your kid playing, but you're sitting nearby. Mm-hmm. David will stick his head in, sing five bars of Let It Go, and then leave. And all the kids start singing and the parents are like, we want you to die. And David is like,
oh my God.
And then he leaves.
Do that at a bar in West Hollywood or a spin class or something.
That's what I'm saying. Go in there, sing five bars of Let It Go, hit high note, nail it, and then run.
I'm going to start doing that.
Every gay in West Hollywood will either love you or hate you. If you do that for a week with a recorder, we would do a whole segment on that.
Done. Okay.
All right. I know you're not going to do it. That's okay.
I'm going to surprise you.
Yeah. Let's talk about Frozen for a minute. Disney's Frozen. It passed Toy Story 3 to become the highest grossing animation movie ever. It's now the 10th largest grossing film of all time, having brought in just over $1 billion. I always say that now, like I'm
Dr. Evil,
like $1 billion in global sales after opening in Japan.
Well,
okay.
Wow.
It's obviously not done yet. It's going to earn with the DVD sales and the merch. And my niece wants a freaking watch with Frozen on it. I don't know why she wants a watch specifically with Frozen on it. I didn't know any children wanted watches anymore, but she wants a watch with Frozen on it. I don't know which princess she wants on it. It doesn't matter. It's not going to happen. I'm not getting it for her. Now, the next time a 5.5-year-old comes swaggering up to you like they own the world because of this fact, and they act like they're taking over culture because their film is now the biggest animated film of all time, or some gay person comes swaggering up to you all like, we own it because of Frozen, here's how you crush them.
Please.
All right. These facts are courtesy of Jeff Bock, who's one of my favorite people. He's a box office analyst with Exhibitor Relations.
Hey, Jeff Bock.
He says, yes, Frozen is the highest grossing animated film of all time, but here's how you crush them. We wouldn't be having this discussion if we factored in inflation and ticket sales, especially when compared to the real queen, Snow White, which, like Gone with the Wind, has probably had more actual tickets punched than any film in history.
Whoa.
So that old ass princess, Snow White, who sings with Whistle While You Work, that's the real champion song, not Let It Go. Whistle While You Work. That song has been heard more than Frozen.
Whoa.
By more people.
Whistle While You Work.
Or at least via tickets punched. Mm. So,
which is pretty impressive when there was no way for people to consume that except for going to the theater.
Going to the theater, that's right. And paying your dime or whatever. So don't rewrite the record with books. Just put in some cleverly placed asterisks. I also asked him, why, Jeff? why does Frozen? I figured it all had to do with the damn song. Mm-hmm. That's why. Is that why the gays like it? Why do they? I don't mean to be like ask a gay. Like I'm not like I have a question. There's a gay for that. Like I hope I'm not doing that to you right
no,
now.
Not
okay,
at all.
Good. So why do your gay friends love Frozen?
I don't know. They love the song for sure. They're all like musical obsessed gays.
Okay.
Also, I mean, I don't entirely know the story, but it's definitely a progressive tale, right? So at least there's that. It's like woman empowerment. And often woman empowerment, especially young woman empowerment, sort of, you know,
resonates.
I don't know, parlays and resonates with the gays.
So. Interesting. I asked him, mm-hmm. I asked Jeff, I said, why is this movie so big? And he said, essentially, two princesses. The movie has not one and a half, but two princesses in one movie. And apparently that's like putting two superheroes.
Oh, yeah.
In a movie, but for little girls. It's like the Alien versus Predator of the 5.5-year-old girl set. Like you put two princesses on screen and it's all of a sudden you've got like this crystal meth crack cocaine for a toddler's eyeballs and they can't stop.
Brilliant.
Two princesses. That's what he said.
I love that.
Yeah, that's what he said. Now, do I ready to ask our first reader question?
Sure.
Go ahead.
All right. Carolyn Gaston asks via Facebook.
What?
Let's talk SNL for a sec.
Very well.
There's a line in Anne Kendrick's opening monologue / song. Sonologue?
No, not songalogue. Don't say songalogue. Go ahead.
Sorry, Carolyn Gaston.
Sorry.
That quips that SNL doesn't pay very well. I didn't realize that SNL's hosts got paid at all. I'd always assumed it was more like the Super Bowl. No cash for the guest, but great exposure. Hopefully, you can get an insider industry, Caroline Gaston, this is a very long question.
She's definitely triple dipping, but that's okay. Go
ahead. All right, Caroline. Hopefully, you can get an industry insider for some answers on this one. How much does the host get paid, roughly, versus the cast? Do they get more if they're returning hosts that will guarantee better ratings? Justin Timberlake, for instance. Also, wondering what the pay scale is like between regular cast and featured players, some of whom seem to be getting almost equal screen time this season. Whew. I know that's a lot of cues. Yes, it is, Caroline, but we love it. I have more, but I don't want to get greedy.
Okay, get this, Caroline, get this.
We got to say her name every second sentence.
All right, Caroline. Okay, Caroline, back in 1996, the amount, they call it a stipend, the amount for guest hosts, the pay, was $5,000. Back in 1996,
what?
Cut to say around 2011, how much of a raise do you think guests
Oh my God, 50,000.
You think it's 50,000 now?
Yeah.
It's still five.
Whoa.
Yeah, as of around then, it was still five. I could not get any figure later than that. Wow. But if there has not been a raise since 1996, you can bet there was not a raise after 2011.
Right.
It's $5,000. And how I know this is a guest host, Justin Timberlake, who has been on several times, told Entertainment Tonight just a few couple years ago, he said it's the best $5,000 you can make.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you think that was something Lorne Michaels was like, Justin, why did you say that?
No, I don't think so. I think if they wanted to have Justin Timberlake,
right.
Caroline G, I think that if they wanted to have Justin back every week, they would have him back every
right.
week. I think he does great. Now, for the cast itself, in the first season of the show, very first season of the show, cast was paid $750 per episode.
What?
By season two, you got $2,000 per episode. So like John Belushi was at one point earning $750 an episode.
That's
yes.
crazy.
Then by season four, went up to $4,000. Now let's cut to the late 90s.
Mm-hmm.
A new cast member. There's a huge gap there between like the 80s,
mm-hmm.
early 80s, right? And the late 90s. By then, the pay had only gone up to about $5,000 to $5,500 per episode.
Wow.
So between that like decade, two decades, nothing.
Right.
Not a big change. That's barely like a cost of living increase mm-hmm. in my tiny mind.
Especially in New York.
Then you get $6,000 in the second year and you got up to $12,500 for a cast member in their fifth year. But that was the late 90s. Even then, living in New York,
right.
you'd probably have to be doing movies, stand up, mm-hmm. other things.
Well, if you want to live like...
If you want to live like you're on television.
Exactly.
It's like you actually have a TV job.
Right.
Now,
I mean,
if you write a sketch, now writing was different though. If you wrote a sketch mm-hmm. that made it to air, you'd also get an additional $1,500 per episode.
Oh, nice.
Okay. Now, Will Ferrell mm-hmm. in 2001 became the highest paid cast member. And he was only paid, well, maybe not only paid, but he was paid $350,000 per season.
Wow.
Or about 17.5 per episode.
Whoa.
Yeah. So he was the high. I was surprised by that. You would think that, like, maybe adjusted for inflation, it would be Eddie Murphy.
Right.
Adam Sandler or somebody like that, but it wasn't. It was Will Ferrell. Color Crazy. Me surprised. Or Tina Fey. You'd think that with all the writing that Tina Fey did.
Right.
She, especially with, you know.
Or even Kristen Wiig, I would say.
Yeah,
by the end, it was
think.
Like the Kristen Wiig show when she left.
Yeah, it was. But she was only on for like 2 seasons, right?
Really?
How many seasons was she on for?
I feel like she's on for like 7 seasons.
Oh, maybe. I don't know what
but
I'm talking about.
But maybe she wasn't Kristen Wiig until the last
capital
two seasons.
Capital K, capital W.
Yeah.
I don't know. Caroline G.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think of that? That's how I hit all the numbers. I think I have.
Gaston,
did we do you right? I think this may end up being a short program today.
Yeah?
Like in figure skating, like a short
program.
Short and
sweet, like a fun-sized candy bar.
It's packed with so much cute.
Ah, so much cute. And it's got a lot of protein as well.
Read the next question, please.
Okay. Kyle R. asks via Facebook.
Yes.
Hey, Ms. Fame Fatale.
What?
I have a question.
What?
Why are Justin Bieber's deposition videos online for the whole world to see? Shouldn't those be confidential? P.S. I'm glad they're online. He's even more of a little prick than I imagined. Hopefully he gets his ass, $$, beat in prison.
That's so gangsta. Now, there is no current evidence that the kid is headed to prison for anything. Current, pending, past, anything. Whoa. Sorry, now let's not, that's, dad, let's not wish the violence. That's not funny much. Now.
Spelled with a cent sign as the C.
As the C, because I'm just that gangsta. Let me, this has actually been going on for about a month. People have been outraged about this. Justin Bieber's fans have been getting on Twitter saying things like, he's a person. He deserves privacy for everything. And my whole view is that if Justin Bieber wanted privacy, he would not have been allegedly driving a Lambo while allegedly high in the wee hours of the morning in Miami.
Right.
Drag racing.
No one that drives a Lamborghini wants privacy.
Bingo. Thank you. You should tweet that. You should tweet that forthwith.
Done.
But in case you've missed it, in the early hours of January 23rd, as most of us now know, Miami Beach police officers pulled over Bieber and a friend on suspicion of drag racing in a Lambo, allegedly, while high. Allegedly.
Scary.
And he had an expired Georgia driver's license. He was slurring his words. And perhaps was less than fully compliant with the cop he was cursing out, according to the police. So they brought him in.
Mm-hmm. Did they not have one of those cams on him, like when Reese Witherspoon got busted for...
You mean the Don't You Know Who I Am cam?
Yeah.
Well, what we know is that there are definitely cams all over the cop station and all over the tank, all over all of it. So there's video of Bieber urinating.
Yeah, right.
There's video of Bieber showing his tattoos to the cops. There's video of all this stuff online. And all of these fans are like, he's a person who deserves privacy. Why does he? He's a person. No. No. Well, this is why we get to see it all. It's a beautiful, 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 beautiful. It's probably the only good thing about Florida that I can think of. And that is
wait.
The Florida Constitution has very specific rules. Article 1, Section 23. That makes this stuff very transparent. Okay? Public right of access is very sacred in Florida, and it's enshrined in their laws.
That's why we get all these meth photos all the time.
It's why you get all kinds of photos under Florida's constitution. Police video, any police video is considered a public record, free for all to see.
I love that.
Whether Bieber's attorneys liked it or not. As a matter of fact, a bunch of... media people went to the court in Florida to make sure that we got to see the wee-wee.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, good.
Yes.
I still haven't Googled that yet. I was being reminded while I'm at work and never...
Maybe a still photo. I'm not sure what it was, but yeah, if you're an outraged fan, please remember, it's called the Constitution.
Right.
It's called your tax dollars at work. Your tax dollars are not there to protect a star's privacy. They're not there to help a star have a better day. They are not there to protect a star's wee-wee. If a star whips out a wee-wee on my tax dollar, I get to see it.
Wee-wee.
Wee! All right.
He's like a modern prince, just like set loose. If this were the Victorian times, he'd be a suspect as Jack the Ripper. He has no consequence whatsoever.
No, he doesn't. He wouldn't. And then
how old is he even?
Sherlock Holmes would still bust him though, because he don't give a shit about that. He don't give a shit about the rich people. He doesn't
give a shit. Dollar sign.
But all this stuff about the public records, there was a battle over these public records, actually, and the media clearly had the upper hand, and that's why you see all this stuff. Florida Constitution. If you fans think that that Florida went too far in releasing all that stuff, that's fine. But then you're going to have to run a campaign to place an amendment under Florida's constitutional law. And good luck even finding the Constitution out there in the wetlands, because there's like, it's surrounded by a moat filled with alligators, I hear. God,
I feel like it's the real life True Blood down there.
And meth labs on stilts and whatnot just to get to the cop station. So good luck with that. It's like a giant Elmore Leonard novel down there.
I hate to even put this into the universe as it could potentially happen.
Better be good.
What if Florida had some radical Super Bieber fan candidate that ran for office purely on the platform for changing the Constitution in defense of Justin Bieber and got like terrifyingly close to being elected?
Why would you? Is this something that you'd like to see happen?
Never.
All right. Now I promised a punchline to my joke. How many Hollywood people does it take to change a hair color? I know it sounds like a dumb question because celebs change their hair for roles all the time. And millions of people get their hair colored and it's not that difficult. You go into your colorist, you sit there for an hour or two, you get the color, bingo, bango, bongo, you come out, you're a redhead. Kristen Stewart just went red for some role, which shouldn't be a big problem for her because you can bite your lip and pretend that it's acting no matter what color your hair is. But I was discussing this topic with my own stylist this weekend, and they told me something rather intriguing. Essentially, when it comes to changing a color for a movie role, it takes a village. You would think that it just would take the stylist.
Right.
No. I interviewed Carla Gentile, who is my personal stylist, and she told me something amazing. She did this for a movie once, for an indie movie. And this was just a small movie. This is what had to happen. First, she gets a call from the director, who came in to talk to her about the character and about the actor and what he was going to do. Then they get the producer involved about whether it's the right process to do with the hair. All right? Then we all come together, she said. Before we actually do the work, it was a small group of people just talking. It was her, Fernando, who's the colorist. She's the cut person. Well, you just love the fact that the colorist name is Fernando. You just love that.
Fernando.
Go ahead. Get it out of your system. I'll wait. Go ahead. No, go ahead.
That's the only bar I know.
That's all. Okay, fine. They could also get the makeup artist involved in some movies.
In case the color didn't look great with their palette or something.
Exactly. The stylist, meaning the wardrobe stylist on set, because if depending on how the actor moves, are you wearing collars? Are you wearing hats? All this stuff goes into the color. The lighting guy can get involved. You could go through a makeup test. The color doesn't look right. The lighting guy doesn't like it. The cinematographer doesn't like it. You go back and get it done again. Yes.
And poor hair.
Poor hair. Well, that's why Jennifer Lawrence got all of her hair chopped blonde in that not really unfortunate shortcut,
right, it's not,
because
like
she said her hair was fried from going dark for her Hunger Games roles and then light for the next role and then dark and then light. It got fried, so she just chopped it off. But because she's Jennifer Lawrence, it was like the second coming of Jesus that she got it done because she's Jennifer Lawrence. And I talked about how much time does all this take. She said that the director's talk, the initial talk, was a good hour of just talking first, like just about that. All right, what the character. Then the director and the producer. That was another half hour to 40 minute meeting, just about the cut of the hair. That's it.
Wow.
All right. Then another half hour of talking with them and Fernando, the colorist. That's another half hour where you all come together. And then the actor comes in and you may talk for another hour.
Like pleading their case?
Just about. No. It's more like, then the actor comes in and decides that the character is going to be, you know, some Oscar-worthy arc of a character. And so that means that he's got to have roots, or he's got to have stubble, or he's going to have gray because he's going gray because his character is dying inside or whatever. And then they work all that out. And this was just a small film.
Wow.
The producer, the director, the actor, the colorist.
It's like a joke set up right there.
That's what I said. How many Hollywood people? When there's a bigger movie, you can multiply all that by 3 to 10 times.
Thank God.
So when somebody of a Kristen Stewart level,
right,
or a Jennifer Lawrence level gets it done, that's that many more meetings, that many more screen tests, that many more makeup tests.
Wow.
Yeah.
Like, Kimberly, patch me in with the East Coast. We got to talk about Jennifer Lawrence and I said, Kristen Stewart's
got to talk about a hair. And what I thought was interesting is, well, why don't you just go onto the set and go under what the lights are going to be? Like, if you're shooting mostly an outdoor movie like All Is Lost with Robert Redford, why don't you just go get natural light and go dye the hair out in natural light? And she said, it's just not done that way. You do it in the salon, and then you better have the expertise to know how that hair is going to read in natural light.
Right.
Or you are SOL. Right?
God.
Now, I wanted to find out how much this costs.
Yeah.
Because I find the money to be
fascinating,
right? For me, you know, a color might be, you know, 175, whatever, 200. Because, you know.
Right.
I roll like that. Each hairdresser or colorist has a different day rate. For a low rent, like low end person to do hair, $2,000 a day.
Whoa.
Up to $10,000 a day for a top of the line hair person. And you know how lots of times in a film, in a star's contract, it will say, I get this particular lighting guy.
Uh-huh.
I get this particular makeup person. I get this particular costume person. I get this particular hair person.
Wow.
Well, you know that the hair person's going to be like, that'll be $10,000 because right. They know that they have the producer where they want
yeah,
them.
Yeah, right.
Right? If someone is on a film, they might be making $30,000, if not more, just to do the work. For if just the hair cut
right.
for a film. So say you're just cutting someone's hair for a film. That's all you're doing.
$30,000.
You're
going to
cut a hair, cut somebody's hair and make sure it doesn't do anything crazy for, say, a month. $30,000.
And I think it's expensive to pay $30 for a haircut.
$30,000. Yeah. So that's what it takes. I think that's maybe a touch involved.
Yeah.
Rather.
Wow. What is this role that Kristen Stewart's hair is going red for?
Whatever it is, it's going to be a lip biter, I'm sure.
Right.
You know, lip biting, fantastic. I'm actively not interested. Like, I'm actually putting energy into being not interested in that role. Do you want to read another question?
Yes, please.
Okay, go ahead. Oh, come on, son.
All right.
The kids are waiting.
Elima L asked via Twitter.
Yes.
I hated the ending of Divergent series, and so did a lot of fans. Any chance the films could rewrite the ending?
All right. Assuming that there is going to be a sequel to the Divergent, because
it's like third in the box office right now, right?
So then, yeah. So if other films are any indication, then future Divergent films may diverge. It takes so little for me from the original. There's a possibility. It's probably already written out, but there's a chance. There's a chance. And I'm going to tell you why.
Please.
Gone Girl
was
that big novel from a year or two ago that everybody loved except for me. There's a big twist in that book. There's a big twist in the ending. But when the movie version is released, the author, Gillian Flynn, has rewritten the entire final act of the movie. So people who have read the novel will not know necessarily what to expect when the movie comes out.
Mm-hmm.
They're not saying obviously what it is, but it's David Fincher, so it's not going to be a total suck fest.
Right.
It's a whole new third act. She literally threw the old third act out and started from scratch.
What a luxury as a writer to be able to like tell your story in a different way.
You know, maybe she didn't want to. Maybe she was busy with another novel and maybe part of the deal was, it could have been the opposite. I wouldn't be surprised if the producer sat down and said, you know, we all know the twist. It's like the whole world has seen The Sixth Sense. They all know that Bruce Willis is dead. Sorry, guys.
Statue of limitations are up.
Right. So maybe so much of the appeal of that book is the twist that I wouldn't be surprised if they said, you need another twist. It's part of the brand is the twist. You need another twist.
Oh my God. I haven't read it yet. Can you tell us right now what the twist is?
Yeah, I guess I can. I mean, in the book, which has been out for a while, the whole book is about the disappearance of a wife. And throughout the book, you don't know if the husband did it or not. You suspect the husband. The world suspects the husband. It becomes a media frenzy. It's not clear whether it's the husband or not, but you think it is. There's traces of blood found on the floor, you know, hair in the wrong place, yada, yada, yada. And as it turns out, the wife is actually just a sociopath who hates men and has a problem with them. And she's escaped to make her husband's life hell.
Oh my God.
And she's actually just like living out in Appalachia somewhere, trying to wear a hat and get away with it. Yeah. And I didn't like that ending. I never, ever, ever liked the Bitches Be Crazy ending.
Right. Oh, we talked about this.
We did. We talked about this.
Ages ago. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's a different twist.
Right.
But that makes sense. But it's not the only example I have. I don't know if you're a fan of the Hannibal Lecter series, the original Hannibal Lecter novels.
I don't really
not really. Do they scare
stuff.
You?
No, they do.
Do they disturb
me.
You just a little bit?
I live by myself. I don't need to read scary stuff like that.
All right.
You can't close your eyes in a book.
In the original books, the main heroine is named Clarice Starling. In the movies, the original first couple movies, or the first movie, she's played by Jodie Foster. And Clarice and Hannibal Lecter have this kind of twisted relationship. In the books, by the end, Hannibal Lecter actually romances Clarice Starling and has sex with her, and they become lovers.
What?
At the very end of the series.
Wow.
Jodie Foster was very not down with that.
Right.
And she didn't want to do the series. She didn't want to do the rest of it. So Julianne Moore came in, but they rewrote the ending anyway. And in the ending of the Hannibal series in the movies, it doesn't end like that.
Mm-hmm.
She never, ever once even considers becoming lovers with Anthony Hopkins.
I'm holding back terribly blue and obvious humor.
Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it, JJ. We have British people listening now. I go on ITV this morning now once a week, and the British are polite people.
That's right.
They're super nice to me compared to Americans anyway.
Really?
And I don't want to unduly upset them with blue humor. This is the home of the Queen and the newly tender Prince George.
My apologies.
We do not insult the British.
Where can we when can we watch you?
You can't watch me in the States.
No.
No, I've tried. They do put the segments on the internets.
Ooh.
But if you're from the United States,
yeah.
Some sort of all-seeing eye knows this. And when you try to access the ITV website's segments from the US, they're like, "Core Blimey, you're from the United States." And then there's a big blinking thing that comes up that says, "Core Blimey." No, not really. but they won't let you see them.
Look away, turncoat.
Look away,
something's
rebel.
All for us.
Right. So, yeah, only if you're the Queen subject can you
Well,
see
congratulations.
It. Well, thank you. But the point is, let's not go blue. Because if the Queen is listening, she could fall over and die because she's 2 billion years old.
I've already turned it into a charming periwinkle I shall keep for myself.
Thank you so much. Speaking of charming, if you find me charming, you may want to reach out to me and ask me your own question about how Hollywood works. JJ, do you remember how to reach me, or do I have to do this myself?
I do. They can tweet you at Femme Fatale on Twitter.
No. No. They can tweet me at Femme Fatale Says. All right. Go ahead. You want to try again?
That's going to be my second.
I'm sure it was.
Guess.
Do you want me to keep going?
Yeah.
You've had a glass of wine.
Do you want
me to keep going?
Okay, yeah.
You can also find me on Facebook, where I am The Femme Fatale. I also have a website and a blog, www.thefemmefatale.com. I have a Tumblr. I don't know why. And we've already mentioned Twitter. I think that's it. Oh, and if you want to email me old school, like maybe you're the queen and you only do email. Leslie@thefemmefatale.com. Thank you so much for listening. No matter where you are in the world, we will see you next week. No future.